We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Guilty as Charged podcast. My name is Steven, and I am the host, as always. And joining me is my guy, Tyler. Tyler, what's up, man? How are you doing today?
A little sniffly, a little bit plugged up in the nose, but you know what? We'll get through it, man.
Yeah, it is that time of year, although you were just a little sniffly like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, so apparently I've just been, you know, week to week with a sniffle and a plugged nose for a few weeks. Now developing into sore throat, so ongoing. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I think I've said this before. So I was sick. I feel fine now. I took yesterday off, and I was just like, I was just over like being sick because I felt like I had like a sore throat and like I was congested for like a week. And I was like, you know what? Like, I'm just going to take a day and I'm going to sleep it off. And it worked. But I work at an independent study school. And so we have like 16 teachers. So we're a smaller school. I'm the only school counselor at my site. There's like 10 tutors and then a couple admin, things like that. So our staff is like 30 people in total, like 35. And I feel like everybody on the entire staff at one point in the last 2 weeks has like taken a day off because they've been sick or their kids have been sick. So it's, it just, I guess is that kind of year in terms of the sickness. So hopefully everybody else on here listening is, staying healthy. And you know, as we continue to get into the winter season, I hope you guys are able to stay healthy. So have, of course, the Chargers and Broncos game to preview. We did a little bit of that on the Chargers channel today, where we went over some overreaction segments. I think we had a great time doing that. And then, of course, after we talked about the Chargers special teams unit and the success that that unit has having, Mr. J.K. Scott won AFC Special Teams Player of the Week. So shout out to the special teams unit, man. It's the vibes with that unit are truly immaculate right now. And I actually like am going out of my way watching special teams film this season because A, that's how the season is going. And B, it's a great unit right now. So I was actually excited to pull up the special teams film and see what these guys are doing from a gunner standpoint, from a return standpoint and everything like that. So shout out J.K. Scott. Congrats on the award. Very well deserved. His second. The statistic that they shared with it was that he had the most punts downed inside the 20 since 2019. So it's been a minute since we've seen a punter performance like that. Benjamin Solak on the Ringer shared that the Patriots' average starting field position against the Chargers was at the 13-yard line, which was like the worst in like 10 years. So wow. Very much a credit to J.K. Scott and that unit for the way that they controlled that game last week for the Chargers.
Outstanding. So they've got Scott twice for special teams player of the week. Cameron Dicker for sure. Dustin Hopkins for sure.
Darius Davis had it after the Jets game.
I mean, Ryan Ficken just producing excellence, yeah. No matter who you are.
Yeah, love to see it. So we'll dive into the game this week. We have a bit of news-worthy items to discuss. We talked a little bit about JT Woods coming back on the Chargers channel, but some injury updates on Joshua Palmer, who was at practice today. I don't think he participated fully, but they are opening his 21-day window as of yesterday. We'll see exactly what happens in terms of his return. The Chargers, of course, play next Thursday, so really you have a short week in between here. So, and from a Josh Palmer standpoint, that's less than ideal. But Tyler, when are you potentially thinking that this can result in a return for Joshua Palmer? What's kind of your expectation for him when he does return?
I think it'll take the maximum amount of time that they can afford to give him. If it's 21-day window, I think it'll take all of the 21 days for it to happen. He was out there on the field. I thought, okay, you know, great. That's awesome to see. You look down at his knee, there's a big brace on it.
Huge brace.
Yeah. So like, it was unmistakable. So this is not a returning Sunday sort of thing. This is probably not a returning next sort of thing. So it's going to be the whole deal. What to expect at that point? You know, we've seen players and hope for players to come back better from injuries. Now, this is not an ACL tear. It's not like what Jalen Guyton went through. But, you know, we've seen with, you know, J.C. Jackson now, Austin Johnson, Jalen Guyton, these players, you hope they come back better than they were. And I don't think we've seen any of those three players come back the same. Palmer's pretty tough. This is not the same kind of injury. I expect him to take up that wide receiver two role as soon as he gets back. But I don't know. It'll be that same dominant stretch where he dropped, a buck 33 on Snead and McDuffie and those guys. So hope he's back sooner than later, but it's going to take a bit.
Yeah, in terms of, you know, his return, well, I guess getting to your point, really the only one that, you know, had that kind of knee injury season ending last year and came back that has looked like his former self is Otito Ogbonia. I think he's, you know, continuing to build off of what he showed as a rookie. I think he should be getting more snaps. I think Austin Johnson, unfortunately, does not look like anywhere close to the player that he used to be. In terms of Josh Palmer, I think the earliest I would expect him back personally, I have no inside info here. You know, this is just a guess. But I think the Bills game is pretty much it. You know, if the Chargers had a regular Sunday game next week, I could maybe consider that, but there's no way that he is ready to go. If he had come back today and had a full practice, and if he had full practices, like if he full practices this week, maybe there's a chance. But the weeks of Thursday night games are so drastically different. Like, you're not even really practicing. So really, Joshua Palmer's ramp up time is this week. And then the following week against the Bills, like leading up to the Bills game. So that to me is the earliest that I could see Joshua Palmer returning, because it's a Thursday night game. I think if that were a regular Sunday game, maybe there's a chance he returns next week, but I just don't really see a way based off of how the Chargers have operated that he's back sooner than the Bills game.
That's a great call. I forgot there was the Thursday game next week. And really that Bills game, you already talked about how this game against the Broncos is basically an elimination game.
Yeah.
And it is. But that Bills game is like the one. You know, if you have these next three games laid out in front of you, which is the one you got to be at to play? And that is, you know, thankfully the one that's in three games, that is the Bills game. Yeah, I think that's the do or die. Josh Palmer gets out there.
Yeah.
And everyone just goes out swinging for better or worse.
Yeah, and I would still expect him to come back. Like, this isn't a season-ending injury. And there were some people, like, on social media suggesting, like, oh, like, if they lose, like, what's the point of him coming back? It's like, well, this is Joshua Palmer's job. Like, he doesn't get paid if he doesn't play. So this is not like, I think this is a very different situation than like Joey Bosa, for example. Like, if the Chargers get eliminated sooner rather than later,
yeah,
I don't think Joey Bosa is coming back. Like, he obviously, I think Joey would want to play, but we're talking about a guy on a third round rookie contract still versus a guy like Joey Bosa who is completely maxed out. So I think we'll see Palmer again at some point. I just, like, I don't know obviously how much of a difference it makes if he's only back for the last three games or last two games or whatever. But I do expect Palmer to come back at some point.
Yeah, me too. I'm honestly surprised that we talked about it. I think on the Chargers channel, I talked about the offense could be in for a bit of a rough stretch to close out the season because we have no idea what's going on with Palmer. Lo and behold, the 21-day window gets opened. It does not. Josh Palmer does not change whether you take a receiver in the first round or not. But if you want to be sure one way or the other, you do want to see what he looks like back out there. Like, if he goes, if he shows back up and puts up, you know, 75 to 100 yards per game as a legit part of this offense, you know, you can maybe make different decisions at that spot or move if you don't absolutely need to have a guy. I don't think they'll take a receiver at, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, whatever it is. But it'd be good to see Josh Palmer out there so you really kind of know what your room is more like.
Yeah, I said this in our Discord. I feel like right now, like, based off of what the Chargers next season is going to look like from a cap standpoint, from a roster construction standpoint, I mean, you and I went through and tried to find, like, who are the building blocks of this team, and there's not a lot. And I think the Chargers are in a draft position standpoint where they can't really afford to be picky next year in the draft. You know, you have the three receivers, presumably, you know, obviously with Keenan and Joshua Palmer and Quentin Johnston, but you're at this point where if the best player on the board is a wide receiver and you have Josh Palmer, who has had a few injuries at this point, they've all been minor, thankfully, but there's been at least four that have, you know, either cost him productivity or cost him games. Right now, Quentin Johnston has not panned out. So it's like, if a wide receiver is the best player on the board next April, you take that player because you don't have the luxury to be picky. If that best player on the board is a right tackle, you take that player, in my opinion, because you don't have the luxury. Like, you just need more building blocks. And, like, that's the mission from a draft standpoint. We'll get to a lot of that, you know, going forward. If it's Brock Bowers, the tight end, if it's Kool-Aid McKinstry, whatever. I've only studied one draft prospect, Brock Bowers, and his grade is going to be exponentially high for me. But the Chargers can't be picky. Like, basically, whoever this is, truly, like, take the best player on the board, regardless of position. You figure everything else out because that's the state of your roster. Like, you need more building blocks, plain and simple. You cannot be picky in terms of the position next year.
No, you can't. There's, especially with all the decisions they have to make cap wise anyway, there'll be more significantly more holes in the roster than we thought. But man, some spots, you know, corner in particular, right tackle, I guess I could understand, but I mean, corner and wide receiver, the things that happened this year, I really did not expect it to all basically go down south for every decision, every player. So yeah, you can't afford to be picky. You're right.
I think edge rusher also applies there because, like, I think we agree that Khalil Mack should be back, but even if he does come back, he'll be 33 during next season. And, you know, pass rusher, this is a very rare season where we have three legit, like, dudes making super strong positive impacts in Will Anderson, Thule, and Byron Young. But generally speaking, you look around the rest of the rookie class and, like, it takes a minute. So, like, if, you know, Laiatu Latu or Dallas Turner is the best player on the board for you, you just got to take those players. And, like I said, you figure the rest out. So again, we'll have a lot of time to cover draft prospects. We'll get to some questions throughout. So if you guys have questions, like, by all means, Bearnips wanted to ask this, will he really be eliminated if we lose? I think this is dependent on specifically, like, which site you are using. Generally speaking, the Chargers right now, as it currently stands, their playoff chances are between like 8 to 12%. I think ESPN has them at 12.5. Sumer Sports has them at 9. New York Times has them at 8. Generally speaking, like I said, it's like 8 to 12%. If they win, those odds increase basically between like 15 and 18%. So it's a big game in terms of like what this does for you from a positive standpoint. On the other side, it really is an elimination game. You know, this, if you lose this game, your playoff chances go from like the 8 to 12 to 1 to 3%. Again, depending on the site which you're looking at. You know, New York Times has it at literally less than 1% if you lose this game. So, again, like, so you're telling me there's a chance kind of thing? Sure. But like, by all means, like, this is an elimination game. If you lose this game, you're pretty much done.
Yeah, as you said, it's the postseason. It basically starts, it probably started last week, but it really does start on Sunday against the Broncos.
Yeah. And it's not quite the same extent as the Broncos, but if the Broncos lose this game, they go from right now, they're around like the low 20s. If they lose, they're around that 8 to 12% too. So it just becomes that much more difficult. Isabel had this question. I was planning on touching on this, but
yes,
they asked about it. So I know you briefly touched upon this on X. I still think it's weird to call it X, but whatever.
I didn't even know what she was talking about when you mentioned that. Wow. Okay.
On Twitter. but opinion on what Staley said in regards to competition in the running back room, does this mean he will give Spiller a chance? So for those who missed it in his press conference today, Brandon Staley was specifically asked about giving Joshua Kelly more touches. And his response was that they are going to have more competition for touches this week. He didn't specifically say the plan was to give Joshua Kelly more touches. The plan was to give Isaiah Spiller more touches. But this is really the first time where he has publicly stated being open to splitting up the running back workload. And I think it's well past due at this point, Tyler. But what is your opinion on Brandon Staley's comments about the running back touches and the way that they've been splitting it up?
I'm curious. Well, we have to see it actually happen, right? I don't know if this is a, yeah, sure, we'll compete and see what happens, or no, we're really going to change it up and everyone's going to see a different role for some players. But we have seen them do that with the secondary group, and it's worked. My first reaction to this, honestly, is, one, thank goodness, and two, what took so long? You know, we've been discussing everything pointing to at least Joshua Kelly being more effective as a runner, not as a receiver, right? But in terms
not even close as a receiver.
No, the yards per route run difference is like, it's really different. don't even look at it. It's not great. But yeah. Look, we've at least been begging. If Kelly only gives you 3 yards per carry, 3.5 yards per carry, that's better than two, you know, that's better than 2.5. And the difference in 1 yards, 1.5 yards is what could really take the Chargers just another step forward in success rate, being a better offense, protecting better on third down, because it's not 3rd and 9. You can just tell at this point that Austin Ekeler as a runner, it's over. Like, it is not, and it was really fast, right? We talk about running back cliffs. It really felt like that. And there was like a slight hint of it last year. And yeah. Arjun started to catch in on it. But then, you know, then Austin Ekeler came and was amazing for the most of the rest of the year.
Right.
But after really post-injury at this point for Austin Ekeler this season, it's the cliff. Like, it's been rough to watch him. And the decision-making is not there. The contact is not there. It's just, he's no longer the Austin Ekeler that got him that first contract that basically sort of won him the job over Melvin Gordon. So, Yeah, it's time. I'm curious if Spiller is at least active this week. They signed Elijah Dotson back to the practice squad. So, you know, we'll see what happens through there. But it's time. It's time. In theory, you're all assuming and hoping you make the postseason. You want to go on a deep run. You're all back next year, that sort of thing. So I really think you do need to start seeing what you have in Kelly, even though he's technically not back next year. He's very affordable next year if you want to bring him back. And then Isaiah Spiller, like, he's your only running back under contract. Got to start seeing what these guys have to see what you can have for next year as well.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to bringing Joshua Kelly back, but I think he probably also needs to be moved down a peg. Like, I think in his ideal world, he is kind of a RB3 special teams kind of player. Regarding Austin Eckler, like, I think it's the lack of juice is extremely evident at this point. Like, I obviously he had the run against the Packers where he clocked in at 13 miles per hour, which is wild to me. He's not as explosive. Like, it's a matter of fact when it comes to, you know, his ability as a runner. Like, they ran that jet sweep and I felt like I was watching somebody move in mud. Like, I really couldn't believe, and it sucks, right? Because Austin Eckler is one of, I know that the public opinion of Austin Eckler over the last year has really changed, but it, in terms of like stories and outcomes, right? Like, I don't think that there's a truly like better outcome than Austin Eckler's career. Like, I think I always like to remind myself of like what it was like when he came into the league, where he, this was before the number changes, right? Like, they literally gave him the number of somebody who they thought had zero chance of making the roster. And now 7 years later, he's one of the best running backs in franchise history. He's certainly been a pillar of the Chargers over the last 4 or 5 years. And it sucks to see. Like, it really is sad to see like the decline hit so drastically. Like you mentioned, the first, I think like 4 or 5 games last year, we saw like glimpses of this. And like at this time last year, we were also advocating for like more Joshua Kelly touches. And then Austin Eckler, like, I don't know what changed, but he really started to like come on strong and looked like the previous version of Austin Eckler. We're in week 13. Like, it still looks pretty bad right now. So it's, you know, it's whatever statistic you're looking at, yards per carry, yards after contact per attempt, rushing yards over expectation, it all paints a pretty poor picture for Austin Eckler, and it's sad. It really is. Regarding Isaiah Spiller, I don't know how much we will see of him. We are less than a week removed from Brandon Staley saying that Isaiah Spiller needs to do way more in practice than he has. He needs to improve in practice, and he needs to, you know, whatever the case may be, whatever they're looking for, Isaiah Spiller is not proving that he deserves more touches in practice. Maybe the chance at a competition inspires him. Maybe it brings the most out of him, and maybe we're back to, you know, preseason Isaiah Spiller. So they cut Elijah Dotson this week. He's on the practice squad. I'm like, I don't know what to make of this. I think we'll see more Joshua Kelly, but I don't think this results in a significant change for Isaiah Spiller's role with his team, because we're a week removed from Brandon Staley saying like, hey, he's not doing enough in practice right now.
Aren't we also a week removed from them saying that we trust Austin Eckler and we're going to try to find ways to get him more involved in this and that. So,
yes.
I mean, look, this, you know, you got to say some things you got to say, and not everything works out the way you want it to work out. But this is one where I feel like there's nothing to lose. Like, what there's, that sounds so harsh. There's no way you can get worse as a rushing unit than you are right now. Like, you literally cannot get worse. It's the worst since 2012 in terms of poor success rate on most of the majority of your games. So if you are a decade spanning, you know, worst of all decade rushing attack, you have to try something different because you literally can't get worse.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And this is a situation where I think Austin Eckler can still play in the NFL, but it's not as an RB1. Like, I still really enjoy watching him play on third downs. He's a fantastic pass protector.
Yep.
He still is an effective pass catcher. You know, you can use him in the screen game. You can use him as a route runner from time to time. That has kind of regressed a little bit. So I think he could be an effective like RB2 right now, but he's not the same guy. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, Austin Eckler haters out there who are saying like, will say like, well, this was like how it was last year. It's just not true, objectively speaking. Like, this is unfortunately been the cliff for Mr. Austin Eckler. And whenever he's done, I think he has a strong future in broadcasting or whatever he wants to do. But the Chargers need to make the change. But to me, this quote by Brandon Staley indicates more Joshua Kelly. Specifically, I don't think we'll see much of a change for Isaiah Spiller or Elijah Dotson, unfortunately.
No, and they have to. Just watching the way the Texans, I didn't watch a whole lot of the Browns against the Broncos, but the Texans did enough in the ground game to really help out the rest of their offense. And you just need that. The Broncos have a good group of rushers. Again, we can't just have this 1 yard per game or what per play sort of thing. Yeah, Joshua Kelly, it's time. I'm curious what the split looks like. But it's very obvious to me who needs to be the leading rusher, who needs to be the leading receiver. It's almost just kind of like, or receiving back. Yeah. It just feels obvious there. And you're right. I think Eckler does have another few years to his career. Some team, some fan is going to go, hey, my team signed Austin Eckler as to be their third or second back.
Sure.
And he's going to contribute more as a receiver, you know, and occasionally maybe at the goal line, but you love him as a pass protector. You love him as a receiving option. Like, some team is going to feel really good about adding Austin Eckler. He just can't be what he currently is for the Chargers in this role.
Yeah, I mean, the Chargers faced him on Sunday. Ty Montgomery has been in the league forever because he has some kind of receiving juice to him. And it's not like he touches the ball a lot, but, you know, he can stick on a roster. So we'll see what happens there. I think from a schematic standpoint, like, what the Chargers run game does best, it's not a lot. But they have these like quick hitters from shotgun, specifically with Joshua Kelly. And that's where he's been able to hit, you know, find some juice. And I think that's something that they can lean into. All right, we'll get to the next super chat here, and then we'll dive into this matchup more specifically. Isaac, we appreciate Isaac. He says, Keenan, Williams, Bosa, or Mac, keep one. We've talked about the big four several times, but I think our answer is the same.
Yeah, it's Keenan, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
It's Keenan, and I believe in, let's assume everybody's intact. The whole coaching staff is still here. I believe a lot more in Giff Smith developing an edge rusher than the receiving options around them developing a receiver. No offense to them, but like Giff Smith, we just saw it with Thule. I believe in that group.
Yeah, 100%. Also, I think like Justin Herbert was asked about Alex Erickson, and he like was like, I trust that guy. Like he expressed that trust, and we've seen that time and time again. Well, not time and time again, but like these key moments, he's gone to Alex Erickson, and like trust in a relationship is so important to Justin Herbert, and Keenan Allen is his guy. And I think like Keenan's game is going to continue to age gracefully. And I think like he's still extremely productive. Like he's second in the league in a lot of categories right now. He's certainly top 10. I think as long as Keenan can continue to play at a high level, I think you keep him around.
Yeah, easily.
Had an earlier super chat from Mama Shun. She says, feel better, Tyler.
I'll try.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what's up, Chargers fans? Make Little Caesars the official pizza sponsor of the NFL, part of your game day. Order online during our pizza pregame 1 hour before NFL games and get ready for some football and fun. Choose your favorite Little Caesars pizza or pick the toppings you crave. Either way, you win. And speaking of winning, everyone scores with convenient delivery or our in-store pizza portal pickup. So grab some friends and enjoy a few slices during the tastiest hour before Chargers kickoff.
Hey, it's Tyler from the Guilty as Charged podcast. I'm here to talk about Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a skill-based, real money daily fantasy sports game. How does it work? You pick 2 to 6 players and if they will go more or less than their Prize Picks projection. Watch your progress update in real time, win up to 25 times your entry amount, and cash out your winnings with quick scoring, settling, and withdrawals. Prize Picks offers frequent discounts, bonuses, and other exciting offers. Players can enjoy community-wide promotions, including weekly promotions like Taco Tuesday and Flex Friday. I've loved using Prize Picks so far. This week, I've got Justin Herbert with more than 284.5 passing yards and Keenan Allen with more than 82.5 receiving yards. To make your selections, go to prizepicks.com/guilty and use code GUILTY for our first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/guilty and use code GUILTY for a first deposit match up to $100.
Okay, let's get to some of this matchup between the Chargers and the Broncos. Very interesting coaching matchup. Brandon Staley was asked about like the similarities between the Broncos offense and what the Chargers have, and he was like, yeah, there's some. So he's not wanting to get into things, but we were discussing in our group chat between the five of us, you know, Joe Lombardi meant a lot and means a lot to Brandon Staley. Joe Lombardi was Brandon Staley's offensive coordinator in community college. Joe Lombardi really got Brandon Staley, you know, started in a coaching fashion. I think that Daniel Popper outlined this, you know, when Joe Lombardi was hired, that when Joe Lombardi was in New Orleans, he brought Brandon Staley out to New Orleans for the summer, and that really kind of catapulted his career as a coach. So, like, there's a lot of emotional ties here. There's also the fact that, like, Sean Payton really wanted to coach the Chargers last year and was, like, extremely vocal about it. And Colin Cowherd was extremely vocal about his desire to coach the Chargers. So this is a very interesting coaching matchup. The Chargers faced Vance Joseph last year. You know, he's running kind of a pseudo Vic Fangio defense. So there's a lot of connective tissue here from a coaching standpoint. But, Tyler, when you kind of zoom out and look at this coaching matchup, what's one thing you're really looking for on Sunday?
Ooh, one thing I'm looking for on Sunday. I don't know if it's a specific thing. I was looking at the way that the difference between last year and this year for the Broncos, and it really was the way that the Broncos are now winning the close games that they weren't the previous year. It's the, I think they're 4-3-1 score games this year. I think they were 3-9 in one score games last year. And what is that difference for this team? Why are they winning these games? And what has been the turnaround? The difference has really been it's coaching, obviously. The first three games of the season or four games of the season where they were 1-3, disastrous start for the Broncos. They were 1-5 to start the season. But this turnaround, there's a reason for this turnaround. There's some sort of thing that's going on here. And I am very curious which coach can kind of get the most and be the most prepared to win between these two guys. If we're just talking about like some storylines, because I feel the Chargers in moments where they need to rise to the occasion have not quite been able to do that this season. Yeah. That's very evident in these games. The Broncos, their streak of wins, like their set of wins, they're it's pretty good over the last few games. I mean, you're talking about the Packers, you're talking about the Chiefs, talking about the Bills, the Browns. Like that's a very, very good set of wins for them. So I am curious, just from a preparedness and emotional stakes perspective, who's playing for their coach or because of their coach to go win and not take the AFC West, but like take that next step up to try to get to the playoffs? That's and right. Who's just kind of passive? And I'm worried that the Chargers are more of the latter, because they just, in some of these moments, they just kind of either play tight or they don't execute. Whereas the Broncos have found a way now to flip the script on their entire season and win these close games instead. So I'm just curious how these two teams look.
Yeah, I think you look at the Broncos and like what has happened and like over the first month of the season, like, hey man, like I made some jokes about Sean Payton. Like I think everybody did. when they had 70 points hung on them, which is like ridiculous. I think that that was the only time I've ever seen a team score that many points. But there's something to be said about, like, when you hit rock bottom, like, what does it do for you as a team? And for the Broncos, it clearly has, like, energized them. It clearly has brought this, like, well, we're playing with house money, like fuck it, like, let's just go see what we can do. And they've rattled off a lot of wins. You know, the Chargers haven't necessarily hit rock bottom, so to speak. Like, they've been competitive in these games and everything like that. So it just creates a different kind of energy. And I think they've really capitalized on that. I think Sean Payton has done objectively a really good job of capitalizing on that. But like, there's also this aspect of training wheels, so to speak, of like what the Broncos are doing, and also just a play style that's not super sustainable. They're living off of explosive plays. They're living off of turnovers right now. So like, you know, you go back and watch their game, like against the Bills, like the Bills' success rate in that game was very, very solid. EPA per play, very solid, but they turned the ball over three times. And like, that's just like been the Broncos' MO recently. I was looking this up because I was curious. I was listening to the Athletic Football Show last week, and they were talking about the Broncos and like the things that they've enjoyed watching. And Nate Tice was talking about like their play action game. And, you know, they don't run play action a ton. I just had this up, but in terms of like percentage of dropbacks of play action, Russell Wilson is 18th out of the 32 starters. So middle of the pack in terms of like how often they do it. But if you sort to big time throw percentage with play action, Russell Wilson is tied with Matthew Stafford for the highest percentage of plays of big time throw plays in play action concepts. So when they do play action, Russell Wilson is letting it rip, and he is back to this. He's not fully back to like who he was, but Sean Payton has brought that part out of him, that like play action, deep shot, big game hunter part of Russell Wilson. That part of him is back, and that's just how the Broncos are living right now. So, you know, Sean Payton has kind of manipulated things from an emotional standpoint. He's brought the best part of Russell Wilson's game back out, and I think for those things, he deserves a lot of credit. And those are the things that the Chargers are going to have to match up with and account for this weekend.
It's kind of funny because this is Russell Wilson's lowest ADOT of his career. I can't imagine why. But I can't imagine who would be partially responsible for that. But like you said, they do have these explosive plays, which watching back the Houston Texans game, it's like they didn't really do a whole lot. But their two scores were the deep shot to Cortland Sutton and then one really big explosive play to Judy that got them to the one. And they punched it in from there. I mean, it was basically just those are your plays. That's how we're scoring. And so I'm curious how the Chargers hold up this week against those plays. Russell Wilson in the play action game, he does look a lot more comfortable. He does run it quite a bit, too. It's one of the best like rushing seasons of his career. Not like the 800-yard season he had in his Pro Bowl years, but on pace for, I think, 434 yards this season. So we'll see. I'm curious if Staley can, in any kind of anticipation of play action or something, just get a free rusher at Russell Wilson, because there is, I think, only Jalen Hurts. It was from Joe Rolls. Where is it? On the season, Wilson has the second highest percentage of pressure due to his play and decisions at 24%, which is just behind Jalen Hurts. So watching that Texans game, it was when Russell Wilson was on, it was great. Those big plays were there. When there was an opportunity for him to have to make some sort of decision with pressure in his face, particularly if he was doing some sort of play action, it was I'm running, oops, and then sacked, you know, just drifting way back in the pocket. Huge sacks, unnecessary ones as well. Missing Samaje Perine standing in the flat for a first down on third and three. So I'm curious how Staley manufactures things to get in his face, because Russell Wilson will definitely take those catastrophic sacks.
Yeah, I mean, Russ has always been that guy, but he's always been able to mitigate it, and that's not really been the case this year. So getting to the kind of like key matchups and X factors, as we always do, I think there's two big key matchups for me. And I think the first one is Mike McGlinchey versus whoever the Chargers have on that side. You know, Garrett Bowles on the opposite side, I don't know if you want to test him that much. He's playing at a really, really high level. He's only allowed 19 pressures, which is one of the lowest totals among starting offensive tackles. His pass blocking efficiency rating is 97.5. So he can be had. It's not like he's, you know, Tristan Wirfs out there or Lane Johnson or anything like that. But I think your attention should be trying to continue to put Mike McGlinchey in a tough spot. Right now, Mike McGlinchey has allowed 42 total pressures and 12 combined quarterback hits, 5 sacks, 7 other hits. His pass blocking efficiency rating is 94.3, which is like lower than Storm Norton in 2021. So it's really bad for Mike McGlinchey. They gave him a huge contract too. It's just he's one of the worst, like legitimately one of the worst starting offensive tackles in the league. Obviously, there are some backups who are worse. But Teemu Risk does this great graphic of the pass blocking matchups. Like it tries to account for like who are you facing on a week to week basis, and then how much are you exceeding your pass blocking expectation. And Mike McGlinchey is like in his own quadrant in a bad way. Like he. Like he's the version of like
Quentin Johnston.
I wasn't gonna say that one. I was gonna make fun of a different player on a different team. But yes, Mike McGlinchey is in his own planet of bad offensive tackles. Khalil Mack hasn't lined up a ton from the right tackle. He's done that more without Joey. So I think this is obviously another big potential sack game for Khalil Mack. I think also this is probably a game where we could see Thule kind of go off, because Thule has done more work from the right side. That's the spot that he told me, like that's where he's more comfortable. So I think this could be a big edge rusher game for the Chargers, because like you mentioned, Russell Wilson is very prone to taking sacks. And then Mike McGlinchey is awful at the right tackle spot.
Yeah, I was looking at it. Like, think of what we've thought of Trey Pipkins this season, and he's like 1.2 or whatever it is in PBE below Trey Pipkins. Like, it's not pretty. Selfishly, I do hope Khalil Mack lines up against him. I want, if nothing else,
I want the record more than I want Tuli to get more sacks for sure.
Yeah. Tuli's 21 years old. He's got a long time until he's even 32. Give it to Khalil Mack. And why not? Like, Khalil Mack is your best edge rusher. Get him on their worst tackle.
Yeah,
I think Khalil Mack will do just fine.
I agree. So it should be fun. I think this is a game where you could really like highlight that right side. Like this past week against the Patriots, they really highlighted the left side, which is Trent Brown's side. And I forget who their left guard was, but like that's where they really like focusing stuff. This week, you flip it to the other side and really try and take advantage of Mike McGlinchey. Tyler, who is your key matchup this week?
Isaiah Basie versus Jerry Jeudy. You're talking about the two guys that line up in the slot the most. And I think it's just very intriguing in general. I think Cortland Sutton's going to get the big plays, of course. That's a bit of who he's been. But Isaiah Basie has been, again, only 21 yards allowed the last 2 weeks. Jerry Jeudy, not what they wanted, you know, out of a first-round pick, of course. But he's still due for like 40 to 50 yards every week. You look at his production, and it's consistently just solid. Nothing over 75 or 80, I don't think, but never like a nothing burger. It's a very solid bit of production. So again, Isaiah Basie, technically you could include Derwin James in there as well, but if I'm just looking for one to one, Isaiah Basie versus Jerry Jeudy is kind of my key matchup there.
Yeah, I think that's a good call, because Jeudy, I think, is the guy that's hurt the Chargers more than Sutton. I'm just like kind of basing that off the top of my head. But also I think with Sutton, I think you're talking about like jump ball situations, whereas Jeudy is kind of like the sustainable option for them. Like, you know, he's the one that he's going to go to on third downs. He's the one that Russ is going to go to in key situations. So I think that's a good call with Jerry Jeudy for sure.
Yeah. Who else did I have?
I think we do have to just at least bring up Zach Allen for the Broncos pass rush.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of like the guy for them. Like they have three edge rushers who are all playing a lot right now. Nick Bonito, Jonathan Cooper, and Baron Browning.
Mm-hmm.
But Zach Allen, I think, is their best player up front. He's got 42 pressures on the season, 6 sacks, and 9 quarterback hits, according to PFF. His pass rush win rate is 12%, which I think is like right in line with Morgan Fox's. But
yeah, I think
Zach,
it was.
Zach Allen plays like triple the snaps. So Zach Allen's a good player. He hurt the Chargers last year. I think he had 5 pressures and a hit last year, so it wasn't like crazy. Obviously, Justin Herbert does a great job of avoiding sacks, but I think we have to talk about Zach Allen. You know, I think we both agree that the offensive line played much better last week, and specifically, I thought Jamari Sawyer was outstanding, and I think we're unfortunately approaching the territory where Jamari is better than Zion. We'll see what happens there next year, but Jamari has been really solid for this team, and I think that this is a really key matchup for him and for Zion too, obviously. But yeah, Zach Allen's a good player. They're gonna have to account for him for sure.
Okay, so let's pause there for a second, because I do want to ask about that, because in terms of pressures allowed, everyone allowed 1 or 0.
Yeah.
And everyone's grade hovers about the same for passing, pass blocking that game, except for Zion Johnson's. It's like, it's not good. Yet he only allowed 1 pressure and 1 hit.
Yeah.
So what was it on film that you're kind of like, yeah, I don't know about this performance from him, or that Jamari was just that much better? Or
I think Jamari was just that much stouter. Gotcha. I think like there were a couple times where the one thing that Zion, I think, can consistently count on is his ability to recover. There were a couple times where I think, I want to say it was Christian Barmore, like, beat him initially. Zion was able to recover, or like Will Clapp was able to come over. I didn't see Jamari get beat at all. There was like one stunt that they ran that like kind of got pressure on Justin Herbert. If I were charting that game, Jamari would have allowed, I would have credited him with 0 allowed.
Gotcha.
It was really like a nitpicky thing, assuming that's the one. But I didn't see Jamari lose. Like, Zion didn't allow a lot of pressures, but there were a couple times where Christian Barmore just got him.
Gotcha.
The good news is that Zion can recover from quite a lot. Like, that's where we see the athleticism come into play. Even like, there are times where he'll like kind of fall over or lose his balance, he'll still recover and not allow a pressure. But I think he's getting beaten initially at a higher rate than Jamari is right now.
Gotcha. And I know they chart that too. It's, you know, wins but no pressure against any of these offensive linemen. So interesting.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but that's where we're at. Zion's not in the same kind of boat as Quentin, because I do think Zion is like fine. Like, I think he's a fine guard, but he's another guy that's gonna have to really just like get after it in the offseason and prove that he can bounce back to merit being a first round guard selection. All right, Tyler, who's your biggest X factor of the week for the Chargers?
Ooh, I was almost going to talk about Joshua Kelly, and I've said it 47 times, but we sort of talked about that. So
it's fair.
I'm just going with the X factor of whoever is particularly in charge of keeping Russell Wilson from scrambling. I feel like this is Alex's thing that he says every time the Chargers play the Chiefs. So I guess in his honor, I'll talk about Russell Wilson, and whether it's Kendricks, whether it's Derwin, whether it's Murray, whatever. It was so, the Texans mostly had everything figured out against Russell Wilson, but he was very successful at running the ball. I think there was, in that game and the Browns game, I think like 4 different fourth downs or 3 different fourth downs that he converted with his legs. So as I sort of talked about earlier, he's a much better rushing season for him than he has in years past. And so I think just the way they stop that is, of course, they'll stop the run. I think they'll stop the run. Those runs by quarterbacks have been a bit backbreaking. So the way they stop that would be great, because I think then you kind of have the one thing to focus on after that, which is the explosive play to Cortland Sutton. And hopefully you can mitigate that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a key factor. It always is a key factor with Russell Wilson. The Chargers did a terrible job regarding for Bailey Zappi's mobility, which I can't believe I just said that, but there were like 4 or 5 times where Bailey Zappi escaped and was able to move the pocket and create yards with his legs, which again, was not expecting, did not know Bailey Zappi had that in his bag. Russell Wilson is not, like you mentioned, he's not the same kind of player that he used to be, but he can still be an effective scrambler. I forget which podcast it was, but one of them was talking about like how much EPA per play that he's generated on scrambles. And I want to say it's like in the 8 to 10 range. So like it's a very valuable asset to them. So that definitely is a good call. X Factor. I'm trying to think of guys that we haven't talked a lot about. Cause like my first instance was like Gerald Everett. But like we have talked about him all the time. Like, of course, like we would love to see him get more involved. Like you mentioned, Joshua Kelly. I think this is potentially a game where we see Patrick Surtain's shadow a little bit more. I'd look this up. He's only taken 19 snaps in the slot. Like they do really trust, I forget his first name, but his last name is McMillian. He's their slot corner now.
Yeah.
But this could be a game where, I'm totally thinking of the Vance Joseph decides to let Patrick Surtain shadow. For what it's worth, at this time last year when they played the Cardinals, he did let Byron Murphy shadow Keenan Allen because he felt he must have felt like that was the guy that you have to take away. So it was a decently productive game when the Chargers played the Cardinals for Keenan Allen. But I think this is a game where you might use Keenan more as a decoy and maybe kind of design some other touches elsewhere. But at the same time, like Keenan has been getting like 35% of their targets. So I guess my X factor is whoever Patrick Surtain is not guarding.
Okay. I mean, that's fair though. It's not Surtain's rookie year or even last season. It is projected to be what is going to be his quote unquote worst season, but it's still Pat Surtain. That's a good call there. Did you feel that Quentin Johnson was more involved out of intention by the design of the offense? Do you feel his role was changed a bit, or was it just pouring rain and they had nobody else to throw to because Keenan was hurt?
I think it was the first one. I think that he was more intentionally given targets as the first read. A bunch of the slants were him as the first read. The corner route was him as the first read. They did actually run him on quite a bit of drags and crossers. He didn't get the ball on those, but this kind of game feels sustainable for Quentin. I feel like this is the kind of stuff that you have to do with him. We can talk about like the separation aspect of things and the drop. And Matt Money Smith was saying on his Instagram live that like after Quentin dropped the pass, he was like completely dejected on the sideline. Like he stood in the rain, like by himself, like he was like far down on the sideline. So I'm concerned that there's a confidence issue here. You know, after he had the Packers drop, like he didn't go back in the game. After he dropped this pass against the Patriots, he didn't really go back in the game. So I'm concerned, not necessarily about like Quentin's like, I guess, role at this point. Like my biggest concern right now is his confidence.
Yeah, we're hoping that he finishes with like, let's say 400 receiving yards this year. That'd be a nice finish to the season.
Yeah.
But he will mostly have done it by not being himself, by not playing to really any of his strengths and what that he plenty of opportunities to have more. Right. And you have to, you know, catch the football as a receiver, but he will have done most of this by not doing anything that he really has suited him. So hopefully they find some sort of confidence for him. You're right. Plenty of shallow crossers, plenty of drag stuff. I think it was the Gerald Everett throw towards the red zone where Quentin was open. A couple of times he was definitely open. And now I got to sneeze.
Bless you. Is that another one in there?
No, I mean, there's like 50 throughout the whole show. There's a super cut of me somewhere just sneezing and blowing my nose today.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. That's got to be frustrating. But yeah, I do think that Quentin was more involved intentionally. I hope that continues. I am worried about the confidence. I was talking with Jason Bellier. I don't know if he's in the chat right now. I don't think so. But even like, so the issue on the drop was almost the same issue on the corner route. He tried to catch the thing like underhanded, which is like quite literally like the worst way possible you can try and catch a football. So I guess like the good news, if you're looking for like a silver lining from the drops, is that like it's a very correctable issue. Like I don't know what is leading him to try and catch these passes like underhanded. You know, but I don't know, like that kind of feels like an off-season thing.
Yeah. Or a pre-draft thing.
But yeah. Oh, well. That too. Hopefully he's able to finish the season strong, because this is a very important game for him, for Josh Palmer, all these guys who play pass catcher for the Chargers, because there could be a lot of changes in the offseason.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. Before we get out of here, Tyler, do you have any final thoughts?
Dude, I got to go take an allergy medicine and a NyQuil or something, dude. I don't like feel sick really, but I just cannot stop sneezing and sniffling. So you know what, man? Go in for me, Chargers. I will feel much better if you do.
Yes, go in for Antonio Gates as well.
Oh yeah, that
last,
too.
Last couple times they've honored an all timer. It hasn't gone.
You see that one? Yeah. LT's one. Oh gosh. Yeah.
Well, and I think when they played Jamal Williams was last year. Mm-hmm. I'm totally blinking on the game right now, but I'm pretty sure they got like killed in that game. This year when they honored Charlie Joyner and Kellen Winslow, it was the Miami Cowboys game. No, Miami. Okay. You're right. Miami. That's right.
Yeah, at least it was entered, you know. Is the offense scored.
Sure. So do it for Antonio Gates. Yeah. They should only throw to Keenan in honor of Gates, just to honor him. Give Keenan Allen 25 targets and see what happens.
Yeah, see if he can pass Gates during before halftime. He's got 1,400 yards to go. So.
Yeah. Oh, man, that'd be funny. I guess the last thing to say here, I am giving away 2 tickets to the Buffalo Bills game. I did not tweet about it, because every time people tweet about giveaways now, there's like 4 or 5 fake accounts and bots that get created. So that's usually where I've done giveaways in the past. I will not be doing that this time. It is exclusively on our YouTube community tab. So if you are a subscriber there, please go check it out. If you are not a subscriber, please go check it out. That's where I'll be giving away the tickets, and that's where I'll announce the winner on Saturday. So no subscription necessary, no retweet, whatever. Just felt like doing a Christmas giveaway. So happy holidays. Hopefully you guys, whoever wins, enjoys that game. So please go check it out. All right, that's going to do it for us. We'll see you guys next time on Saturday for our usual Saturday show, where we'll have our final thoughts and predictions for this game, take some questions, all that good stuff. Yeah, that's it. We'll see you next time. As always, bolt up.